Okay. We're gonna try to finish up how about the hours. It's okay. You know it by heart. We're gonna finish up. Tell them out.
I understand.
How about the hours? Okay. So first, just some things that I forgot to mention last week. 2 points about the homogenizer is, first of all, when a homogenizer, the pistons of the homogenizer are very thick, they're like this big, and they're long and thick, which means it takes them a very long time for them to get hot. So during production, they get hot because hot product can flow through them for hours at a time. We'll see in halacha, hey, how that makes a difference, how it turns it sort of into a cleavation. So when you're kashering, if you kashering, we talked after we finished, we talked for a minute that you have to, the thing has to get hot. If you just flow water through a homogenizer for 2 minutes, that piston is not going to get hot. It's a really huge, thick piece of metal. Well, we were talking about some of the chemistry side of it, but I should have mentioned that point, which is that it's got to flow through enough to get the thing hot. And so quite a thick piece of equipment you have to go down. We'll talk about that more in halacha.
Well, that thing, how much is it by layer?
So we'll talk about in halacha, that it really gets treated sort of like a cleavage. That's why I'm just mentioning it, because we talked about it.
So what are you saying, though? You're saying, let's suppose that during production, that whole piece of piston gets very hot. So you're telling me, so when you kosher, you have to, if it takes 2 minutes or 3 minutes of hot water going through it to get that thing hot, you got to do 2 or 3 minutes?
Yes. Yes. We'll see more about that.
So you're like, I don't know.
If you otherwise it's just
steel,
something like a clipper.
Correct.
It's looking at a clear vision where they have kakula.
Right. That's correct. So that's a more halacha hate issue. I just wanted to mention, we talked about a homogenizer. I'm sorry, it's sort of like not really the place here. But that's correct. There's other examples of that we'll talk about. And the other thing was that I forgot to mention, when I read the document about homogenizer, I saw that it said there that a homogenizer gets, there's so much friction of the pistons moving back and forth that there's water used to cool off the pistons. Okay, in the back end.
Yeah.
The back end is water used to cool it off. Okay?
Schatzmeister?
Right. While it's moving, those pistons keep moving all day long like this. So in the back, there's water, a little bit of water dripping on them to keep them from getting overheated.
Okay.
So that water, so two things. Usually that water goes to the garbage, but potentially they could use that water on the plant. And the other side of that is that the water could come from a trace on the plant. I mean, companies have all kinds of creative ways of using water, reusing water. So water that was used in one piece of equipment, a chiller, it was finished, so before they throw it into the garbage, might be used as the water here to cool this thing off. So it's just a potential for bleeds. It's not easy to get a bleed like that, but there's a potential. Just it's worth when you look at the homogenizer, aside from looking at the to see if it's made out of
carbon.
Right. It's very hard to get a bleed in that thing.
So what's the concern exactly?
Because, okay, the water shoots, and there'll be like a thin stream of water pouring on the piston.
So bleeds are going to come from what to what?
So if the water is milking,
if
the water is milking or trace, now it's coming right next to your power plant.
While it's running the kosher product.
While you're running kosher product, then it could, so then...
Of course, they're not going to actually, there's no contamination actually, right?
No physical contamination, bleed contamination, potential bleed.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so that it's just something... Aside from picking up the thing to look at the thing, you could see where does the water come from and where is the water going to, okay? It's usually just plain tap water going back to the drain. That's usually okay. The cast iron pot, the update, I'm not really finished, just an update on this. I captured half of the cast iron pot. Because I want to capture half and see what happens. I expected to see loads of the Rajabil bleeds coming pouring out of it. I saw nothing. I tried in two different pots. I saw no signs of bleeds, or I hoped at least to see a little oil on the surface or something that would make me really feel better. I saw nothing. The kosher side doesn't look any different than the not kosher side. What I didn't do yet is I want to now scrub it. Supposedly, if you scrub it,
you only koshered one side.
One side.
Do that?
No, one side, like the left side instead of the right. Not the front side, the back. Okay. And then I wanted to kosher I wanted to scrub it with soap and scrub it to see if you could really get something off. We'll see about that. And I also have not spoken to him first yet, so I will not tell you what he said until I get it from him straight. Okay. Let's go back. Let's start over here. Okay, we skills maybe we'll finish next week. We can't start. Okay, the Rama says the Machar says we had said last week that you have to take these kelim. You're not allowed to use them on Pesach. You're not allowed to even keep them out. They have to be put away. That was like a Hilchos Pesach question. And I get more to Hagol's kelim that it says on the second to last one. I'm Hetzer Chesika Be'esh and the Moel Behem. V'loy L'shum Kli Cherish and Ishtam Behem Chamin. Afil Shloy De'ar El Shira L'Soicha Roischin V'yesh Oisin Afil B'Kisheni. That if you the you would think is you of course can't do hagol. He's not even telling you that's like implicit. You can't do hagol, And you can't even do libun by just sticking it into the oven and heating it up, because if you, when you do libun, this is a din of kabbalah kachpolta, that just like the bliya came in from the inside of the kli, so too the bliya has to go out from the inside of the kli, from the inside of the kli, and therefore putting the fire on the outside of the kli. If you just stick it into the oven, the fire is going to be on the outside of the kli. That's not considered libun. This is from the Gemara. And the reason for that is the principle of kabbalah kachpolta. Even though the heat is in the same side that it was during the bliya also, but the food was on the inside, so the fire has to come from the inside also. So just sticking it back into the oven again is not going to do the trick. Okay. That's what the Mechaber says. And this din, Mirtashem next week, halacha beis, is more about this, and we're going to talk about that. That's in having been on the inside and the outside. That's more halacha beis. And then the Mechaber and the Rambam say that even the din is even by Klishen, this is also awesome. This is really the original part of this thing comes from Rambam in Samachet in Yerideh, where he says that L'chatchilu L'machmir, that a Klisheni does have Blias. That's L'chatchilu have L'machmir.
Samachet.
No, it's in Blias. It's from, I think, in Hilchas Malicha. I think that's where it is. I don't remember. It's someplace not where you would expect it to be. That Klisheni does have Blias. L'chatchilu L'machmir. Over there it says, but B'dieved were not Machmir. B'dieved, if we made a food, it's not Asur. But the Mishnah Berurah says here that for Pesach, we say, just about everybody holds that even the B'dieved it's also for Pesach, except if your mamash, you get everything, you get a
head. Even before Pesach?
He doesn't, he sounds, I assume, so on Pesach. Before Pesach, it's hard to imagine how it could be also. But he's talking about, you didn't kasher it, or you kashered it wrong, now you want to use it for Pesach, even if it was a Christian, I presume he means on Pesach. So he says, it's Hesem Ruba, Mok, Mir, Simchas Yant, anybody, you know, hope. Tackle things together, then it's also that itself. He says if it ain't a ben yomer, it's only going to be mutter. It's only mutter. The makom has the roof of a near simchas yontif. Ain't a ben yomer is mutter from before Pesach. So if you use a kli that
you're using it on Pesach, using before Pesach.
Right.
If you're using it on Pesach, then it doesn't help any.
Right. If you be using it before Pesach,
all we always do is everything that before Pesach.
But if you do something a kli that's ain't a ben yomer before Pesach, it's kosher. That's not the evidence. I mean, it's not only the near simple. He's talking on yet. That was the simple case. So the Mishmur says that there's a chumra for Pesach that's also even the evidence, except in very extreme cases. Okay. Machaber continues. I feel in your malam gecholim, even if you'll fill it up with gecholim, meaning, so you took care of this problem. You put the gecholim on the inside. So the inside. Now that's how you're supposed to do it. But put the heat on the side where the bleed is. That also doesn't work. Why the chashina dima chayis paki? Or the imprinting of Hashem be Yisbalku. So the guy, this is a chashas rabbanon that maybe the person won't be careful. Or it's a chashas rabbanon, maybe he won't be careful. So he won't do a good job. Okay, so the person's not going to do a good job in his kasher. Okay, so the there's a bunch of there's three different groups I think of how cases that have to do with this chashas the demopaki. Now this chash, it says it here for Libra, the same chash as for Hagol also, as you can imagine. I was able to put into three different groups. One is where it's mamish exactly like this kind of a case, okay, which is like a regular Libra. Most, everybody, except if you're like some super expert with a lot of experience in this, anytime you go to the blowtorch to a Kli, especially if you want to do Libra Gomer, even in most cases for Libra Kal, if you're trying to do Libra Gomer, there's almost automatically a chashash of Dilma Paki. There's a chashash, unless you're some super expert, there's a chashash, you're going to break it. Okay?
You're going to warp it,
you're going to break it, something's going to go wrong with it. Okay? That's automatic. As a specific example, that there's oven belts are a thing that very often will need Liebman Gummer. The belt that goes actually through the oven, in a lot of cases, needs Liebman Gummer. And there really is a way to cash them. There really is a way to Liebman Gummer. Okay? Someone at the OU, together with a company, developed this whole method of how to do Liebman Gomer. They set up fires, and maybe we'll talk about it at a different time. The belt goes through the oven to get preheated, and then they have a whole bank of flames right outside of it. So the belt is already 500-600 degrees. And then it goes through these flames, and it gets evenly heated back up to, you know, all the way up to Liebman temperatures, and it's very thin, and they're able to do a Liebman. Okay, so there is a way to do it. But for most people who are trying to do it, will be afraid to break it. This was done under, you know, very carefully watched, and the people who they were doing and all kinds of things. But for most people doing Liban have exactly this chash, the chash of Dilma Paki. And also, when we get to Halacha Baal, we'll talk about the Mirtz Hashem, a glass stovetop. If it's possible to do the kasher glass stovetop. And one of the ideas of kashering it is the Lieben Kal, okay, which is not a basic now, but the company tells you if you make this thing too hot and you heat this thing up too hot, it'll crack. Okay? That means is any person who's going to try whatever method we're going to think of to do Lieben Kal, is in the back of their mind is concerned, oh my gosh, I might crack this thing.
Okay. I did it.
You did and you cracked it.
Right.
Okay, so because of that, so the chash d'mapaki, that's mamash the case, is that the next time if you do it again, after you replace it the next year, your wife's going to say to you, Marsh, don't do it like last year. Okay, whatever it was. So you know what I mean? And that's the chash d'mapaki. That's why you're not allowed to do Lieben Kal.
15 minutes after it stops.
When it cool down.
Right.
Okay, so that's another case. Oh, that's another case I was going to say also, which is there are big tanks that are used for storage of cold things. Okay? Cold things, so there's no bleeds in it, no regular bleeds, but there's bleeds of colors. In some cases, those need full hagol. Okay? You don't do meal of eerie, you have to do a full hagol, that's much later on. You have to do a full hagol to them. The problem is that the tank is made of very thin metal, it's not meant to handle heat. But it's not even that it can't handle heat. It's not like it's going to melt. It's made out of stainless steel. But what's going to happen, what happens is you kasher it, and you fill it up with heat, and you boil it, and everything's wonderful, and you figure out how to kasher the whole thing. But what happens is at the end of the kashering, the tank has loads of steam in it. That's what's been filled up with steam. Steam is I forgot what they told me in the class, but steam, if you take this much water, takes up this much amount of space in steam. Okay? It's a huge difference in space. So when your whole tank is full of steam, then you finish kashering. They say, okay, guys, let's drain this thing out. Somebody opens up the top of the tank, okay, or opens something up to cool it down so they can start putting product into it. What happens? The steam collapses, condenses into a liquid, turns from the steam into a liquid. So all the stuff that used to take up this amount of space now takes up this amount of space. And the pressure from the, all of a sudden the tank is empty, it's like a vacuum sucks into the inside of the tank, and the whole tap. So it has to be cooled down very slowly. What I'm saying is that, but if you were to say to a company, we're going to kasher this thing, if they have any brains, or the mashgiach has any brains, they would be afraid that the guy is going to collapse the tank. Because the tank can handle the heat, the etzem, it can handle the heat, but the second you turn the kashering off, and somebody drastically cools down, it's going to happen like what happened to you, which is, when it cools down, the inside of the tank will be completely empty. It will be a vacuum, and the outside will smash the tank in. So if it's a stronger tank, it can handle it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's more reinforced. It's meant to handle hotter things, and it's meant for different kinds of things. It won't do that. That's mom's chashash of the mupaki. That's the same kind of a thing. And two other ones. One is, if you have companies have this thing, there's a real thing, I'm sorry, not companies, there's a real thing that you're not supposed to have steam and hot water running through the same line at the same time. Okay, I don't remember what the problem is, but it's very not good for people.
Steam and what?
And hot and water at the same time in the pipe. Okay, you could have water pipes and you could have steam pipes, but the combination is not good. I don't remember why. So in washing, particularly in washing trucks, okay, to get much cushion.
Is this a steam water line? No.
There's a steam line and a water line, like in your sink. You have a hot water and a cold water, and there's a place where they mix, where they merge, and then it gets right out. But they don't run through a pipe, through a length of pipe, steam and water at the same time. Okay? So when you pass a truck, so what you do is you want to pour boiling water through a thing, down to a spinner that goes into the truck. If you do the water there too high, if you do mamash at kashering temperatures, you will get some boiling in that pipe. That's why this is special for trucks. Get some steam into that truck, and there's all kinds of charges in those pipes. Okay, I'm not sure why a doctor for trucks had that problem. For trucks, usually the kashering will drop less than boiling, at like 200 to keep the steam down. Okay, now one thing that's going to lead me to the next thing, to the next group is. If a caustic, which we use as a pygim, companies use it to clean, they use it at 140 degrees, 150 degrees. We use it, we think of it as a pygim, and we want it to be at kashering temperatures, so we make it very hot. If that caustic is in an open clean, or like in a kettle, or it's at the end of it, what you're doing with it is pouring into a drain, like into a closed drain, into open drain, it's like falling on the floor, like full of stuff in a plant that just runs into the drain. So a company will rightfully be concerned of safety. Okay? This is leading to the next thing where it's not a chashash d'mapaki, but the person will be apprehensive to do kashering right because he's afraid here it's a safety concern. That if he having hot coffee around is super dangerous. People could really hurt themselves. So the company will rightfully be very apprehensive about it. And Mamela, as the rabbi says, come on, let's make it hotter, the guy over there is cringing and doing what he can. So there is not a chashash that I won't do the kashering right because I'm afraid it's going to break. But there is a related chashash, which is I'm not going to do the kashering right because this guy standing over me saying, oh, come on, rabbi, don't do it. You can't do that. I'm afraid. And whatever it is. And anything like that is within this group of you can't kasher in a situation where there's a guy might not do it.
How do you know this last one? I mean, I could argue that every kasher has some danger to it. What does it say this last one?
No, if the person who's doing the kashering is afraid to do the kashering for some reason. Okay, so the chashash here is
you're right. You're right. It's let this, you're afraid of getting hurt is included.
I don't think that I need I can't prove to you that the mechaber would tell you that that thing is awesome. But the same logic that says to you, it says in Shulchan Aruch that if you're concerned and you're afraid, you might not do the kashering right.
I understand, but every kashering is dangerous.
Why is every kashering dangerous?
Boiling kettles, people have gotten hurt.
Okay, that's correct. People have.
And the loophole you start talking about, stones and water splashing.
If a person is doing a kashering where they're afraid to do the kashering right, okay, you know, there's something that can go wrong, then the same way the mechaber said that's what seems to be. Okay, you're right. It doesn't say the mechaber. The same way the person is afraid of cracking their thing, and therefore we don't let him do a kashering where he's afraid he's going to break it because he might not do a good job because at the end he'll pull back.
By that token, two things. Number one, the case with this fellow put up the fire over there by the belt,
yeah.
I think if you did it right, the mice issue, you're not supposed to do it because of the same massage.
Oh, so but I'm getting to it. Hold 1 second for that. I'll answer.
This is a bunch of problems. We've got to solve
my
problem.
My third group of things was this is the second group where it's not a chashash you're going to break it, but just a chashash of. Not a chashash you're going to break it, but some other, like a safety concern. My other one was going to be there are places where you now use a blowtorch against health regulations to use a blowtorch. So the guy is very apprehensive to use it. Okay, but the third group was where there's really no chashash at all. And for example, and that's what happened with the case with the belts, Tyson's oven belt. What you do to prevent being afraid is you go, the company engineer has to be involved in making the kashering protocol. It's not on my head. And it's not even that it's me against you. It's not me saying mishkash like this, and the engineer is sitting there screaming at me. It's that I say to the engineer, this is what I need. How do you think you could do it? And we work together so that when we finish the plan, he's a part of the plan. So that in this case with the oven belts, the reason why they weren't afraid of it breaking is because the company personnel built it, and they took responsibility for it. And they said, look, we think this is going to work, and we understand that if it doesn't work, we
can lay on that bottom.
Yes.
Right? Then I don't think that helps.
Because we're going to see in a second that you could still believe him. The Gzeir Zabon is not don't ever believe him. The Gzeir Zabon is you have to do it. So you have to do. We'll see in a second. You have to do it in a way that it's clear that you're willing to do the full kashering and take the risk. That's what the business is. That you have to be you have to do something that makes it obvious and clear that you're not afraid of here.
But so, I don't care about $50. I've spent $1,000 on my answer. I don't care about $50 for a penny. Okay?
But the guy in the company did not spend $1,000 on his answer.
Okay, but he's right. He's certain,
I don't have a hard and fast rule, but rule that does work is what you say is you're afraid of people getting hurt, of water splashing over the place. The companies more care about people getting hurt than about kashering. That's their thing more than it's our thing. Okay. We care about kashering. They care about people. Now we care about people getting hurt also, but we care more. We're thinking more about the kashering. They're thinking about the hurt. So we say to the company, I'm going to have boiling water over here. What are we going to do to keep people from getting hurt? Oh, it's going to be caustic. How can we? I don't want caustic spilling on the floor. It's going to hurt somebody. So the company is good at designing. That's what companies do. They're engineering or their sanitation people do these things. You guys have to be part of the program. The OU went so far. This took us even a different angle. Maybe not exactly for this reason. They made a kashering release form. They have a form that before they do kashering, the company's got a sign that we understand that kashering involves heat, taking equipment to situations that it doesn't usually go to, and we accept that. We want to take that. Okay, so they actually gave ABS if we could use the same their form. They said, yeah. And it's all the same idea, which is if the company is part of the kashering, if the company people who know about these things are part of cashering, then they're not as nervous because they help design, and then the rabbi can do his job better, and he doesn't have this apprehension to do his thing.
So right there, he has the biggest cashier.
Okay.
If I would take what the Shulchan Aruch just says you can't do,
yes,
the company owns, and when the company will sign a release form, and they'll do the protocol, would you say it's okay to go against the Shulchan Aruch just said?
No. No, I would not say it. No, I would not say it. Because I personally would be afraid of cracking the thing. Like, I'm still afraid of I'm going to break the thing. But if
what are you afraid of? They signed the release. What do you care?
Okay.
Hey, they're going to lose the money, not you.
Okay, so we have to think. They have to think of the situation. In this case of a belt, in the case of this oven belt, if I walk into a company and say, let's cash the oven belt and I design this whole system, okay, I would be nervous, and they would be sitting that I'm going to ruin their belt. The belt costs $10,000, and I'm about to ruin it. This crazy guy.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to say that there's somewhat of a like book, you know, there's somewhat of a, Shulchan Aruch says you can't, the Gemara says you can't do it like this. No matter how many precautions you're going to take, that I won't be scared because it's not mine. It doesn't help, right?
The same answer is that it's going to say in a second there are cases that you can't do. When you make it clear and everyone's comfortable, and it's like very out in the open that it's okay. Okay. One more. One more thing I want to mention was two more things. Yes, first of all, this that companies say, I said about caustic in an open piece of equipment. Companies will say all the time, Rabbi, we can't make the caustic to be at cashier temperatures because it's going to ruin our equipment. Okay, which is like a behind the scenes of a dumapaki. Okay, they think we can't do it because it's going to ruin the equipment, or the caustic won't work. Okay, those are two opposites of things. So I want to explain the answer to both of those things. First of all, is in truth, caustic at high temperatures doesn't work.
And what when you say caustic, is it one raw material? Or
yeah, caustic. Yeah, yeah. Caustic is one.
What is it?
I forgot what it is.
Ammonium.
When it gets to a higher temperature, it works better. I mean, it functions better. However, the reason why you're not supposed to make it hot is, first of all, because of safety. It doesn't ruin the equipment per se. What it does is like this. At higher temperatures, the water that's mixed into there boils off, leaving a film of caustic on your equipment. Okay, because what it does is, if you do it at the temperatures you're supposed to, 140, 150, it does its cleaning effectively, and then it rinses out well. If you make it too hot, then it leaves a film on your equipment.
Yeah,
so you don't want to make food in that. You don't want to make food afterwards. So you're not supposed to do it at high temperatures because, not that it's not effective at cleaning, but it leaves itself something behind. And so the company has to do a better cleaning afterwards, which is cookie. Usually you have to use the soap, now it's clean. They just have to rinse it off. Here you have to do another cleaning afterwards to get rid of the caustic because you left the film behind. Okay,
companies told me that it'll make burns inside the equipment.
It doesn't make burns. Burn is not right. It leaves deposits on the equipment.
That's what it means.
Okay, that's what I was told in class. I'm from a cleaning company. Okay. That's what does it. It leaves films behind on the equipment, which you have to clean it well. So you have to.
It's even inside like a pipe of a pasteurizer.
Correct. That's exactly the kind of case. Now the other side is that people say, well, if I do it at such a high temperature, either water or caustic, this is either one, it's gonna my gaskets are gonna break. Okay, the gasket is the part that seals. You have all the plates next to each other. So it's like a gasket around the edges to keep the stuff from leaking out. So they say, my gaskets are going to melt. They're only rated for 160 degrees. They're only rated for 175 degrees. If I do it at a high temperature, it's going to melt. It's going to ruin them. It's going to ruin my gaskets. Okay, so Tetra Pak told us about that. They said, look, the gasket can handle much more degrees than it says on the number we gave it. And it can eat, any gasket can handle kashering. Any gasket. But a gasket is supposed to last, let's say, a year. At a normal temperature, it's going to last for a year. If you use it at 200 degrees, it's going to last only for 6 months. If you use it at 250 degrees, it'll last for 1 month. So we give it a rating because this is meant for a normal wear and tear of this gasket. It'll last for a year at this temperature. If you do it at high temperatures, it cuts down the life of the gasket, how long it's going to last for. But that means if you do it all day long, if you do 5 minutes of kashering once a week, or 5 minutes once a month of kashering, so you've cut down the life of this gasket by 30 seconds. If you do all day long, you keep pasteurizing your stuff at 200 degrees, instead of lasting for a year, it's going to last for 6 months. So you're not supposed to do that. But if you do it for 5 minutes a month, then how much have you cut down? It's not when you hit that temperature, all of a sudden the whole thing just breaks apart. is that it gives more wear to it at a higher temperature. So the kashering is going to, yes, it will affect the life of it, but let's be real. It's going to affect the life by 30 seconds. It's not going to make any meaningful difference to the company. So it's not, you know, that, it's because I can know that, because then the company is not kosher stimulpaki. The company is not, that should relieve company tension from whether you do kashering the temperature. Okay, let's go on.
And where is that your information from?
Tetra Pak. Who makes this stuff? Okay. They make it. They said to us, it's not true. They said, it's just a matter of life expectancy. The ones that are rated for higher temperatures can handle high temperatures for longer time.
Is there only chashasha and the gaskets or something else?
That's usually what the chashasha is. The gaskets, you know, the rubber parts and the plastic, they can't handle it. It says on the paper, it's only rated 275 degrees. You want to do 210 degrees, it's only rated for 175. And mm-hmm. So I'm not saying there isn't such a thing as something that will melt at that temperature. But right. For these gaskets, which is a big, they always mention these things.
The gaskets are talking primarily the rubber.
The rubber stuff, the whole, when you put two pieces of equipment together, you have like a washer in between
right.
from leaking.
Right.
So they say, it's my gaskets are only rated for this temperature. I can't run a higher temperature. I'm saying, and the answer to that is, if they would go back to the company, they don't have to trust you. Go back to the guy who's supplying and say to him, is it me that at 200 degrees it's going to just completely melt and disappear? Or at 200 degrees it's going to have a little bit of less, something, you know, you can, I don't think that's the truth. They can ask their supplier for the same information. Okay.
So there's never a reason to go less than 212.
Right. I can't say never. Never is a strong word. But for these kinds of things, yes, nothing's going to happen to them at 212 degrees.
So why don't we enforce them?
Many places can get it to
a degree. Okay, that's its own different parasha. Okay, let's go on. If you take the kli cheres and you put it back into the kiln, where it was made originally, shemitzar from a kli cheres chadashim, mutter the kivin shemachnisim lehesek gadol kazeh, vade lechayis alayu duma pakim. So the mechaber sounds like he's saying that if you put it into the kivshon, you show that you're not concerned that it's going to break, because in such a high heat, obviously you're taking that kind of risk. You're obviously willing to take that risk. It's a very plausible it's going to happen. So you're not choshish. Not everybody says it that way. Okay. The Torah says that if you put it into a kiln, there's so much heat from the inside and from the outside that. Now I'm putting words into the Torah's mouth, that there's an evenly heated, and things don't warp when it's evenly heated. Okay? If you take a oven rack in your oven, and it's made out of very, very thin metal, okay? If you put a blowtorch onto that, you're going to warp it, because half of it is hot and half of it is cold. If you self-clean your oven, your racks are not going to, those thin little grates are not going to warp. And it's not because they make super racks to go into self-clean ovens. It's because it's evenly heated. It slowly heats up, and the whole thing gets heated up together, and then it slowly cools down all together. But it's only if it's unevenly heated, which is really what the Torah is saying. If it's unevenly heated, then it could break. If you heat it up all together, I'm not saying everything, but many things, that still little rack, it's still a little wire of nothing. If you evenly heat it up to 1,000 degrees and then slowly cool down, it'll be fine. That's what the Torah says, and the Taz says that the Mishnah Berurah brings his Taz, who says like this. He says, it's such a fast process. It's so easy to do libun in a kiln. It's such a quick process that he can't not do it for long enough, because the second you put it in, it comes to libun in 2 seconds. So what are you going to say? I'm not going to do it long enough. As soon as I stick it in, it's basically done. So that you can't be a chashash that he's going to do it less because he's afraid it's going to break, because as soon as he gets it in, it's ready to come out. Okay, that's the... Alva tanul shalom aloi, but now I put it in a regular oven, because a regular oven is not that kind of heat. Okay, let's. I'm going to try to finish up. Like this, the Gemara in Zvachim is a kasha. This whole din just said that you have to leave in Gomer to a klicheres. So I'm going to tell you Rashi's question first, which is, how come the Torah doesn't say you can do leave in Gomer? We're saying this is leave in Gomer. It doesn't say it for Kalem of Kutchum. Doesn't say you can do leave in Gomer. It says you have to break it. Why does it say you should do leave in Gomer? So Rashi says the reason why is because of the sin. But I mean, there's a remnant of the sin in the Torah, because there were no kivshonis in the midbar. The Eden then were traveling. They didn't have time to set up kivshonis, and since they didn't have time, they probably had ovens.
Time. That's what they did have.
What?
They had time.
Okay, no. The way Rashi, they didn't have like the permanence to set it down. Like they didn't know that they weren't like settled enough to, you know, open up businesses and like that. You know, right. So Mamela, yes, you're right. They did have time. Okay, but anyhow, so that's Rashi why they didn't. The Torah didn't tell them to make it, because in the Mishnah there's no such thing.
When the Torah said, "Let's wait a day."
Okay, that's a good question. Okay, so then the Gemara, good question. So the Gemara says, why doesn't it say in Yerushalayim, why is it you should break Kli Cheres that you made Kachem in it? Why doesn't it say? So you should just put it into the kitchen. So the Gemara says,
So the Gemara says
in Yerushalayim there are no Kishonis. There are no Kishonis in Yerushalayim. So in Yerushalayim you had no issue, and you couldn't take it out of Yerushalayim. I guess because it's Yom Tov to take it out of Yerushalayim. I'm not sure. I'm guessing, but I don't know. So the Gemara says you couldn't do that. Fred Tosis, okay. So what about Fakashrin? Why doesn't it say Fakashrin you should do even Gomer? Okay. Now I'm not sure what he means because the Torah's Maram is that you can do even Gomer. But Tosis says when you do Libun, the Kli becomes like a new Kli. When you do a real Libun, it's like a new Kli. So there's no way to use this Kli. This Kli can't be used. If you'll stick it into a kishon and you'll re-fire it and you'll do Libun, you'll have a new Kli. But the Kli, this Kli that you have, you can't use. That's just I didn't follow Tosis. Okay. Fine. Okay. If you have a minute, we could do two side things. One side thing. We talk here that you're supposed to do Libun Gomer to Kasher or Kli Cheres. Okay? As you probably know, the Eater says, he's Madai from Yerushalmi, that for an Issa Durabonon that was Balu into a Kli Cheres, then you don't have to do Libun. You could do Hagol three times. If you do Hagol three times for a Kli Cheres that was Balu Issa Durabonon, then it's good enough. And his svara is, he's saying Yerushalmi, but he says the svara is, Hagol, the reason why you can't do Hagol to Cheres is because there's so much blia, Hagol won't get it out. So the Yerushalmi's svara is, well, if he did three Hagolas, by then you must have gotten all the blia out. One Hagol won't get it out, but three Hagolas will. So maybe we wouldn't be Mechadish or svara for a real Isser. It's only Isser Drabanon, so the Chacham said, you do three Hagolas, by then you come on, you've gotten all the blia out of it. Okay? That's what the Eater says, he's Madai from Yerushalmi. But the Eater says, you know, the Yerushalmi is talking about, I forgot which case, maybe Truma, I don't remember which case he's talking about. He says, so maybe the Yerushalmi only means to be Mekel by Issa Drabonon, She'en Lo Ikum Na Tera. Drabonon is not like a completely made up Issa Drabonon, not one that's based on a Deraisa. And so he's Misopik of that, and that's how the Machaber Paskin said, you're only allowed to be Mekel, you only could do three Hagolas for Issa Drabonon, She'en Lo Ikum Na Tera. And there's two examples of that, and only one of us for us. One is Bishal Akum, that's a serious example for us, and the other one is Chalas Kutzarts. Okay, it's only made in a Kli without they weren't my Fashkal. So for Chalas Kutzarts, you could do Hagol three times for Kli Cheres. That's not only Ikum Na Tera. That's considered Yesh Ikum Na Tera. Okay, so there's two side points I'm going to just say quickly, I won't say it, which is this din that you could do three Hagols if the Bishal Akum for Kli Cheres instead of Libun. Now there's another kind of Kli that needs Libun. One Kli that needs Libun is the Kli that was used for a Kli Cheres. Kli Cheres needs Libun. There's another kind of Kli that needs Libun, which is a Kli that you use the food directly on the fire. You broiled a steak on a grill, you have to put Libun on it. Okay? So could you do three Hagolas if something was broiled directly on the fire, not Cheres? There's a piece of metal was brought directly onto the fire, which was Bishal Akum. Okay? And there's a very real example of it. You make fried eggs, or many other things that are Bishal Akum, and you do it in an oven. Okay, you do it on a belt, it goes right through an oven. So you did the Issa that's here is only the Issa of Bishal Akum. It was a Kli that needs Libun, so that this rule that the Eater said, that you could, instead of Libun, you can do Hagola, he said it by Kli Cheres. But he say the same rule by a different Kli that needs Libun for a different reason? The Svar seemingly would apply, because he says Hagola takes out Blias, so three Hagola takes out all the Blias. So it's only by certain cases. Okay, but Bishal Akum, he would say it. So would he say that Svara by a Kli that needs Libun, not because it was Cheres, but needs Libun because it was done directly into the fire? So I'm not going to say what he said, but Rabbi Belsky had a Kal V'chaimer to say that yes, you are allowed to. Rabbi Sheth would argue that. I'm going to give you something, you'll see. Yeah. But it's a whole deal, and in fact, it's in Divrei Makil as to whether you're allowed to do that or not. Okay, it's a shayla in Divrei Makil and some other Achronim also as to whether you're allowed to do that. The other thing was whether you could be. I'm going to leave that one for now. Okay, we'll leave that. Okay, one more thing we have to just read. The Ramah is the Ramah says, "Hagol kol kli atar klibun, or hagol oslu hishtamish by a few tzoynin b'lo hechsher." If a kli needs to be kashered and you didn't do the kashering, or you didn't do the full kashering, then you're not allowed to use it for anything else. You're not allowed to use it in the meantime. Say, well, I'm using it for cold. There's no kli is cold. And this is an issur drabanan. This is a minig drabanan. And the reason it's a minig which is, and the reason for the minig is because you make mistakes. If you're already using this clay, you're using it for coals, you might use it for pot also. Okay, like Abe told me that they let people using glass plates for coal at a smorgasbord. Okay, so they put it out by the fruit, figuring they'll use these trays of kale, they'll use them for the fruit, which is cold. But the people then moved over to the hot side of the smorgasbord, and they started using it also. So they realized that, which is that's what the minig is. Don't use it for cold, because if it's hot around, because you might use it. So a smorgasbord is a more controlled situation. They can put it out at a smorgasbord that's only cold, and not at a place where there's hot also. But the minig is to not use kalim for cold, because of a chash that you might end up using it for hot also. Okay. So at the end it says, Ayin Yerideh. Ayin Yerideh Sim Kuf Chafalf. Where the other Ramah says, but Bederach Akro, you are allowed to use it. This is only the Kriyas, but Bederach Akro, you are allowed to use it. So this Mamash's case came up this week, that a caterer, the normal setup is that caterers, when they go to hotels, do not bring glass, drinking glasses. They use the drink glasses from the place. Even though the kalim are treif, maybe they put hot cocoa into it, maybe they wash it in the dishwasher. The cups might be treif. What are you going to do with it? You're just going to drink seltzer then. What are you going to do with it? So they let them, many hashkachos will let the caterers use the treif glasses that belong to the hotel. So the guy said, one of the caterers says, well, if I could use their treif glasses, let me take my own glasses, and I'll use them from the Mechutz Lefleishigs also. I'll use the same glasses from the Mechutz Lefleishigs. And of course, they're going to come trapping his dishwasher. They are going to be milk and
inflation. Hold on, but those are only going to be useful.
I'm going to use it for cold. This is, so if I can use the hotel's trape glasses, I can use my trape glasses for cold also. So the difference is, if you use your own glasses for both, that's bekvias. You're using, you have set that you're using trape glasses or milk glasses for inflation, and inflation glasses for milk. If you're using the hotel's glasses, that's bakroi. I'm coming to the hotel, and I came in today. I want to take a drink. I take a drink out of the glass. But if I'm using, these are my glasses, that's the clear. I have milk glasses, and I'm using them for placing. Or I have trade glasses, and I'm using them for both. That's different than using the hotel glasses, where that's, akroi, I came to the hotel. I came for chasen. How often do I go to chasen? I walk in there. So fine, I don't want to take a drink out of the car. But if the caterer has only one set of dishes, that's exactly what the minig is.
But there are people who do what?
I'm not talking about whether individuals can have it. It's a different thing, because they're using it because they don't think it becomes trade.
Yeah,
that's a different. But in the caterer, we're working with the assumption. Okay, without explaining, we're working with the assumption that as the caterer, those things are really milk and soup, not that they're kosher. Okay, we'll just put that on the side. We're just working with the assumption that it was. You're right. It's different than in a home. There's maybe potential why you could. Okay. Now, but there's two arguments against this. Two arguments against using hotel glass, drinking glasses. One is Rabbi Shapiro's argument. I don't remember his raya. I'll have to ask. But he has a raya that bakroi means once every 30 days. Less than once every 30 days. That's a gather of akroi. If you do something more than once every 30 days, that's not bakroi.
If I go to a hotel every week, and I want to eat breakfast over
so
there.
So that may be not, that might be not, because today I went back to here, and here I went back to there. But if the caterer makes parties in this place three times a week, then you can't call the back.
Who's the back cry? On the caterer or on the guest?
That's a fair question. I'm not sure. But now, Shalom told me, I think this is from him first, that he had a different time on this whole thing. He said, back cry means, it came up. He went off to Iowa, and you're stuck there. You need a place. So you're in the hotel, so you have to drink. This is the glass of the game. This is what you drink from. He says, if you are a caterer and you don't buy glasses and you make parties, that's what you do. Is you make parties, and every week you're going to make a party. That's a setup. That's not an akroi. Akroi means you got stuck in a situation. You're in a situation, so then you're allowed to do it.
The guy has a minig. Every time he stops at places where he's out of town, and he's
not. Those are bakroi. That's not.
I shouted into the hurricane, dropped me in this place. I planned on the trip to go there.
You're right. I don't mean. He doesn't mean bakroi. Meaning that it has to just be by mistake. Oh my gosh, I'm starving downtown. I need a drink. I'm going to get it.
Very fine. What's the difference?
Because a guy who sets up his business to run a certain way, he schedules a party. He knows exactly what that's his whole business. That's the opposite of bakroi. I have to just say, these two tanyas, notwithstanding, it's very common that, all hashgachas let people do that. These are just tanyas. One last thing.
Is this,
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Which is the last. Now this that was a year. The caterer and many caterers are Jewish. The last thing I want to mention was: should this apply to companies? Should we say to a company, you have trade kelim, and today they want to make a special run of something, and so they call.
On a regular basis.
Or regular basis, they want to do it every day. This is what they do. So the trade they make high, but the kosher they make cold. The kosher, that's the way they make kosher. It's always cold. So this is a machlokes. Okay, machlokes like this. Rabbi Kanak says, no minute. Okay. Goyim don't have to do minhagim. Goyim have to do shem mitzvah brenner. Well, they have to do minhagim. This is what they want from their life. So they don't have to, they don't have a minute. So we have to make sure it's kosher. Yeah, it's kosher. They don't have that minute. It's not their problem. And Rabbi Belsky, Rabbi Shachter argued for the following. Rabbi Moshe says that to use a kli that's ain't even yemen, the food that you make is 100% kosher. It's kosher mechatchilo. But Rabbi Moshe says you shouldn't do it. We shouldn't give hashkacha to someone who does it. Because it's davar mechur. He says, how can it be that in my house I can't do it? But I go to a certified your company, I say, you can do this, and I have my stamp on it that you're allowed to do this thing. He says, there's something wrong about doing that thing. So they said, what that means is, if you can't do it at home, don't do it at the company. Don't let the company do it. So you at home can't do this big fias, and the company can't do it either. Rabbi Ganak says, no, Mechor, that's like taking it really far. That's for really surim. This is just a minute. And they said, that's exactly what Moshe was trying to say was, don't be such a chacham and say, I figured out that really you're not allowed to do this, but for you, you're the God, you're allowed to do this. That's exactly what Mechor is that if you can't do it in your house, you shouldn't be doing it. That was, it does, don't be so smart and say, this is the right thing. What?
I
agree with Rabbi Ganak. Okay. I meant to answer for sure. I haven't gotten to answer which way you think, so I'm interested in
finish. I'm trying to think of what, if it ever happened to anybody.
Of course it does. Oh, a company that their trade.
We're doing it
now?
Yeah.
Where?
Yeah,
Michelin.
They don't have
to
for that.
I mean,
you know.
The trade is hot.
I mean, we are.
I think
we'll turn off the thing. Okay. Anyhow, we'll meet you next week.